This is music from Mark Turner. Welcome to The Checkout, a podcast and radio show from WBGO. I'm Simon Rettner. Tenor man Mark Turner waited 13 years to release Lathe of Heaven, his ECM recording. He tells us what took him so long. The career prospect of Odine Pope just playing his saxophone never seemed enough. So we created a whole choir of them. 9 saxophonists in all, and one of them is Pharoah Sanders. But first, Walter Smith III likes to outwit himself and his bandmates with his tricky compositions. Regardless, he likes to keep it Still Casual, the name of his album. He joins WBGO's Josh Jackson. That's up next. This is The Checkout. Thanks for checking in.
You truly are Walter Third the Smith.
Walter Third the Smith, yes. That's the Tim Lefebvre. I've been dubbed officially.
Why did he dub you this?
I forgot who said it. Somebody said it, but then he like made it into a permanent thing.
You have... It's not an unusual presence on the internet, but I enjoy it. You're sort of like the syntax police sometimes.
Yes, I do.
You know,
play that game
where you remind people that, you know, how they use words. Is
yes. Well, my mother is an English teacher. She was an English teacher. And that was the game that was played with me all throughout my childhood and all that kind of stuff. Anything I said incorrectly. So whenever someone says something, and not that I have a good vocabulary or know a lot of things, but when something stands out, it's like the first thing that pops in my head is to correct it, because that was like definitely the way that it was for me. So on Twitter or any of those things, it's even more of a violation. There. That's a big one for me.
You are strunk and white. You are the elements of style, there, Walter Smith.
Yes, absolutely.
Still Casual.
Still Casual.
Casually introducing Walter Smith was, I guess, the casual introduction, as
yes,
it were.
Yes, indeed.
And so maybe this is some kind of reflection upon that. I mean, from what I hear, though, there's not a lot of casual elements about how you treat music.
Well, it's still more about like just where I am as a, you know, career-wise, because I think ever since I decided to pursue music, it was always, like, I remember being in high school and my favorite musicians were like Branford and Josh Redman, those guys that were playing, but I never saw myself as them. I was more interested in being like Tim Warfield playing with Nicholas or Ron Blake playing with Roy Hargrove. Like, that was what I really wanted to do. So now at this point, that's still kind of the majority of what I've been doing is sideman stuff. So it's funny to still put out albums but really be a sideman. So in a way, it's like I treat my own career as very casual manner, you know, and even to the point where sometimes I'm turning down dates for my own thing to do dates with other people. So
let's hear some music from Still Casual, Walter Smith III. We'll go with the first Out of the Hatch, Foretold You.
Foretold You. All right.
Thank you. foretold you.
Foretold you.
Tell me a little bit about this. Foretold you what?
Okay. Well, foretold you is actually something that my son said when he first started talking. He was starting to learn a bunch of words, and he had this personality shift, like where if he had already told you something, like if you put peas on his plate, he would, instead of saying, "I already told you I didn't want those," he would say, "I foretold you," you know, like that kind of thing. And it was very weird and like mystic in a way, like, okay, let's not cross him again. He's going to say things like that. It was very, you know, a little bit scared of him. But yeah, so it was just one of those things that he always said. And something about this song, it was like put together very mathematically, and it's like all based on triads and all this stuff. And something about that kind of reminded me, the way he would say it is kind of the way I interpret this song.
You do have a knack for writing titles, I have to say. Something new.
Yes. Genius, isn't it?
Well, you know, it gets to the point.
Yes, and that's what I'm all about.
Are you really?
No, not at all.
Talk to me about something new.
For this album, I had time to work on composition, which is something that I hadn't done before. So I just was experimenting with a lot of different forms, and I wanted to write different sections, different solos, you know, interludes, all this kind of stuff, and make everything expand from an initial idea. This was the first one that I wrote where I was really making an effort to expand what I was writing on. A lot of stuff that I studied with Terrence Blanchard back when I was at the Monk Institute, ways to extend melodies and rewrite them and turn into bass lines and all this kind of stuff. I really spent a lot of time doing that this time around, and this was the first one that I worked on.
Tell me a little bit about that moment when, you know, it no longer becomes the puzzle and becomes the tune.
You know, for me, it doesn't happen until you actually play with people. All of the music that I write, it always seems like an offering, like, can we try this? And then when you hear it come to life with, you know, other than the demo thing that I would make, like with the actual instrument, that's when you hear it in the way that it's, like you said, coming to life. And certain songs do that instantly and you don't expect it to, and other ones you kind of have to go back and work it out a little bit more before it happens. On this record, the one that did that for me, that was kind of instant, was July. It just seemed like it was based on a rhythm, a really simple rhythm, but which I wasn't sure how it was going to work, and I had all these ideas of things to try after we played it and it didn't work. But the initial playthrough was just like, oh, actually I really like this, you know. It's just like a simple song, but it works in that way.
Walter Smith III joins us on the checkout. Still Casual is the recording. What song from Still Casual was the hardest to mix, took the longest time?
Well, the one to me that was the hardest to mix was Green, because there's a lot of stuff going on in it, and it's mixed differently than anything else on the album, because it's not so much about hearing instruments clearly or having them panned or anything like that. It's more about the emotion of the track and what it's about, and it's about Jimmy Green, saxophonist. Jimmy Green lived in Connecticut, and his daughter was attending Sandy Hook Elementary School, and she was one of the victims of the shooting in the school. And the way that they found out, I was hearing that the parents would come to pick up the students, and he had a son that went there also, and his son was not involved. But then they were looking for their daughter, Anna, and they kind of put them in this other room with the other parents, and then they told them, you know, one by one, like, you know, unfortunately, you know, your child was a victim and all this stuff. It just seemed like very dark, and it was like right before Christmas. It was just like this whole, I don't know, like a just ridiculous tragedy, and all the stuff even since then that's happened with the gun laws and people's unwillingness to realize what a big problem it is. But that was, you know, the catalyst for writing that. It was just kind of something that I just felt like there's some kind of darkness to it. But then I would also think about Jimmy. And when I first met him, I was in Boston, and we were playing in this group, Kendrick Oliver, was it New Life Orchestra? And he would come back and play the concerts. And I was just like, man, this dude is ridiculous. Like, this is out of control. But then also, he was like the nicest guy that I ever had come in contact with. And he was always very supportive and very positive. And it was just like, how can something like this happen to somebody like that?
performed by Walter Smith III from his recording Still Casual. He spoke to WBGO's Josh Jackson. Coming up next, Odine Pope's Choir of Saxophones featuring Pharoah Sanders. They join WBGO's Rhonda Hamilton. This is The Checkout. I'm Simon Rettner.
Great pleasure to welcome to the studio today Odine Pope, a gentleman who is especially known for his work with Max Roach for over 20 years and for the groundbreaking group, the Saxophone Choir, which he formed back in 1977, I believe it was. He's also an educator and very involved in the cultural development of the community in Philadelphia, which has been his home since he was a child. And so it's a pleasure to have you with us today, Odine Pope.
Thank you so very much. It's my pleasure.
And we also have with us another great saxophone master, one of the legends in this music, Pharoah Sanders. And Pharoah, especially renowned for his work with John Coltrane in the mid-60s and for his leadership of many great ensembles over the years and producing such classics as The Creator Has a Master Plan and Themby. So it's a pleasure to have you with us as well, Pharoah Sanders, today. It's good to see you. Well, that piece that we just heard, it's a piece called Sis, dedicated to your wife, right?
It's dedicated to my wife. She passed 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, how long were you guys married?
We was married for about 40 years.
40 years. Uh-huh.
And she was a tremendous supporter to the music. She was going to the University of Penn to get her master's degree. And when I went back with Max Roach, he said, well, no way, I'm going to be here. I'm going to travel with you. So we traveled together. Every place I was, she was there.
She was there, Well, usually when one hears the word choir, you think of a vocal choir, but you have a saxophone choir. What was the original idea behind the full saxophone choir that you've recorded with on a number of occasions, which is what, 9 saxophones altogether?
9 saxophones, mm-hmm. piano, bass, and drum. Mm-hmm. The significance behind the saxophone choir, I was in a little place called, I was born in the South, a little place called 96 South Carolina. I was around 6, 7, and 8. I used to speak, sing in the church. And my mother, she was, like I said, was the teacher in the school there. And they had this big 45-piece choir. And from 8 years up until I arrived in Philadelphia around 10, when I was 10 years old. So I was trying to capture that big sound that the Baptist choir was doing. And I played the clarinet, I played the piano, a little guitar. But when I got the saxophone, I said, this is my true voice. Mm-hmm. So that's how the saxophone choir come about.
The saxophone really has that quality, that vocal quality in it. It can
well,
have
the
that
saxophone,
quality.
To all my teachers and studies, the saxophone has the closest sound to the human voice. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that.
96 South Carolina. I never heard a town named 96.
It's on the map. 96 South Carolina is about 75 miles north of Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
It's near Greenwood, South Carolina, okay. Greenville.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just extremely blessed that I had nine aunts, and they would give me, all of them would give me money during, so when you come to Saturdays, like the big fish fries and all that,
mm-hmm.
it would just like be a big, big party every weekend.
We're talking with Odine Pope, and also featured in the ensemble is Pharoah Sanders. And Pharoah, your grandfather, I understand, led a church choir. Is that correct? Growing up, you did in Little Rock. Is that correct?
My grandfather, he taught music. He was in the church.
He was in the church. Uh-huh.
He was over the choir, the music, and he taught mathematics like in a public school.
Uh huh.
And he used to always sit me down and ask me a lot of mathematical things, you know, which is very hard, you know. One time he said, if it were 13 birds on the fence and you shot at one, how many was left? I said, well, 12. He said, no, they all flew away. You know, he was really kind of a little out. I was young, I couldn't understand him too much, but he always sit me down every day and teach me about something very positive in life, you know, that I had to learn, you know. And I told him I wanted to play music. He said, well, that's good, but that's not good enough. You have to learn some other things too. So I looked up to him, you know.
Well, a knowledge of mathematics is very good when you're studying music, isn't it? Because it's really about numbers in many ways, right?
Well, music, in a sense, Clifford Brown said, in fact, he went to Delaware State for mathematics. And he used to tell me mathematics is the secret to learning how to play your instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Because like 3 against 4, 5 against 4, 3 against 8, 5 against 9, those odd meters. The last 20 years working with Max gave me a sense of 3 against 4, 5 against 4, 8 against 3, you know, the different cross rhythms. In other words, it was dealing with mathematics. Mm-hmm. There's one tune in particular, it's called Coltrane Time, and it's dealing with like 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, numbers that Reggie Workman, he sent me. I had never heard this tune before. He sent me nothing but numbers, and I did the arrangement for it.
Thank you.
powerful music from Odin Pope with his saxophone choir and Coltrane Time, the tune, and Odin Pope on that selection, as well as Michael Brecker. And again, the rhythm section on this occasion was George Burton, Tyrone Brown, and Craig McIver. Farrow, I want to ask you a question. You worked with John Coltrane. He chose you to be a part of his ensemble, and that must have been like an honor. Why did he choose you? What did he tell you when he asked you to be a part of his band?
I had went to like Little Rock to visit my parents. So I left. At the time, my cousin them, they was there, so they drove back from Arkansas to Oakland. So I drove back with them. So when I got to Oakland, California, I'm getting this phone call, you know, and from my aunt, and she says, some guy named Coltrane or somebody want you to call him. And I said, oh my goodness, maybe it's something about taking him to a repair shop or something, you know. He wanted me to work with him at the jazz workshop in San Francisco. I hadn't finished doing what I wanted to do, you know, studying. You know, he said, well, can you come tonight and work with me? I said, well, I guess I could. I'm trying to figure out why he chose me. I'm still learning. So I got on the job, you know, and I was still a little bit timid, you know. He said, well, go on and play. I said, oh okay. I was a little more like shocked than anything else. I said, oh my goodness, what I'm gonna do? I said, I brought my horn, you know, and I had to get up on the bandstand and do something. I was really still a little nervous, you know. I was ready to come on back home. I said, nobody wanna hear me play, you know, because I was playing so freely, you know. And At the time, you know, he said, well, don't be worried about this. Go on and play. You know, I said, okay. But I was more puzzled about myself. You know, I said, what am I going to do? I'm trying to figure out what could I be useful in some way. Now, I'm trying to figure out what way that could be useful.
Well, he heard that I'm sure that spiritual quality in your music. I mean, that searching that you were doing with your horn, you know, and he wanted what you had to offer, obviously.
Well, you know, Farrell stayed lived in Philadelphia for about a year, uh-huh. And him and I used to go together, and he used to scare me to death. When I see him, I say, man, here's this guy living in Philly. What are you doing here? And he used to scare me to death, but he used to come up to the house. We talked about music, and I learned so much from Farrell. Farrell is one of the great, great minds of what we do, and I'm just so grateful and very humble that I have this great man with us.
That's Farrow Sanders with John Coltrane on Consequences from Coltrane's album Meditations. Hear Rhonda Hamilton's complete interview with Farrow Sanders and Odin Pope on our blog at wbgo.org. Coming up next, saxophonist Mark Turner's Lathe of Heaven. This is The Checkout. I'm Simon Rettner. Thank you.
Lathe of Heaven is your recording on ECM Records. Mark Turner, thank you for joining us on the Checkout.
My pleasure. Yeah,
I find it somewhat amusing, I guess, just for myself, that you have a recording that sort of refers to a device that actually used to cut master records, being the lathe.
Oh, yeah.
Though
that's true.
The reference isn't specifically toward that. Lathe of Heaven is about a book. Can you tell us?
The book is about a guy that basically dreams, and his dreams, every time he dreams, the universe and everything in it is a new reality based on his dream.
It's a book by Ursula Le Guin. It's interesting to think about Lathe of Heaven and what that derives from, which is actually like a 4th century BC proverb. And it talks about this idea that to stop knowing when you can no longer know is actually this high attainment, this level of high attainment. And to not be able to stop is actually to suffer against the lathe of heaven, which I guess was a bad translation at the time because I can't imagine there was a lathe in 4th century BC China. But but think about that concept. What does that mean to you, Mark?
I think what it means to me, I think I understand it to some extent, maybe. But I think it means that when you get to the point that you're learning or understanding things that can't be known with discursive thought, there's no point in continuing with that type of understanding of yourself, others, and everything in the universe or whatever it is that you're running into. I think that's my guess.
Let it go.
More or less, yes.
Can you find a corollary in what you do for your job as a musician?
I think so. I think it's probably true for most or maybe all artists. Certainly in music, there are things that you can know without using, without literally thinking about them, in the same way that maybe you tie your shoes every day. You know you've tied your shoes, but you don't have to say, "I'm tying my shoes." In the same way, when you're improvising, you don't need to comment on it every second. You don't need to comment, "I'm blowing, I'm hearing, I'm listening to the drummer play the cymbal." You train yourself to understand these things on an intuitive level, but know in a very subtle and specific and skillful way that they're happening and that you can react to those things. I think knowing by discursive thought is too slow to improvise, too slow to make music.
Lathe of Heaven, Mark Turner Quartet, ECM Records. The quartet is Avishai Cohen on the trumpet, Mark Turner on the tenor saxophone, Marcus Gilmore on drums, and Joe Martin on bass. Too slow to make music. This from a man who has... How many years did it take?
Wait a minute. In the moment. Let me put it that way.
Oh, I got you. Right. Sorry, I misinterpreted that for just a moment. I jest, though, but I mean, there is something to not having your own recording as a leader for a dozen years now.
That's true.
It's not like you've been off of the face of the earth entirely. I mean, you've yes, been on a ton of right. recordings where you've been mm-hmm. co-billed or as a mm-hmm. member, you know, yes. Fly.
Yeah.
So, uh-huh. but we've all been wondering, where is the Mark Turner record?
Well, right around the time that my last record, 13 years ago or so, was completed, or I was doing it, right around that time my daughter was born. And then my son was born soon after. I wasn't psychically ready for it, you know. I needed more time playing music, being on the planet to be ready to be a leader.
Let's talk about the composition sonnet for Stevie, mm-hmm. because I remember hearing that with the SF Jazz Collective as mm-hmm. you were on tour playing the music of Stevie Wonder.
That tune wasn't played with the collective, actually. Sonnet for Stevie wasn't. There's Blame It on the Sun, and there's another tune that I wrote for the collective during that time.
Was that a record that you just remember liking of Stevie Wonder's? Or?
It's a record that I heard a lot as a child.
Talking book, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. I think you're right. I heard a lot as a child. My parents, they had a fair amount of records. And they had a fair amount of jazz records, and they listened to a lot of R&B and a lot of Stevie Wonder. So I heard that tune, Blame It on the Sun, a lot. Just, you know, coming home from... We grew up in L.A. I grew up in L.A., and, you know, on the weekends, my parents were pretty social, so they'd go see their friends, and they'd have pool parties, play, you know, poker and Bid Whist, and, you know, have scotch and whatever. They always had their civilized 60s and 70s drinks, and, you know, they always went to Vegas, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're party animals. So, well, that tune was playing while I was falling asleep in the back of the car on Sunday afternoon, going home a lot.
Oh, but I'll blame it on the sun. Didn't feel the sky. I'll blame it on the birds and the trees.
What happened to you if your parents are party animals?
Well, I don't know what happened to me. Sorry about that.
I think about you sometimes and just the work ethic that you have. Mm. And I think, there's got to be something else here. You know, I've sat down with him at his table, and there's personality, but like you get into a place, you get into the environment where you're going to perform music that evening, typically.
Sure.
And you're in another sort of world. I feel like it. There, you, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. you just, you've got complete and utter concentration on the music. It could be perhaps because you're learning it that day. I don't know, but
probably sounds like it. I'm a slow learner, you know.
But incessantly practicing the metronome in the Vanguard kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you got it. You got me pegged. Yeah, that's true. So you're wondering how my parents to me. I don't know. You know, I think I'm not sure about that, but I think that. You know, I think people can be more similar to an uncle, a cousin, a great uncle,
right.
grandparent. So I think that's more like it.
And who are you more like?
My grandfather.
Yes. Tell me about
Lewis
your grandfather.
Lewis Jackson. Yeah. Lewis Jackson, I would say, and probably, I'm not sure, maybe my biological father to some extent. I grew up with my stepfather. He was he's a very dynamic hardworking individual. He was pretty social, but not quite a party animal like my mother is, and my stepfather. He was an aviator, educator, died a multimillionaire, self-made fortune, self-made man. He and my grandmother, I think his family too, both were came from a family of freed slaves long before emancipation. I think they were freed in the early 1800s. He was also an engineer, so he was an aviator, but he also built his own planes, also experimental planes. This is back in the 40s and 50s, early 60s. And I used to hang out with him a lot. There's no TV. The only television they'd watch was they'd watch C-SPAN and McNeil Lehrer, and that was it. And yeah, he would be working on airplane designs and always looking at the stock market and showing me what all the numbers, what he was working with. And we'd go out to the airport, which was maybe a half hour away, and fly, come home. So anyway, he was a great guy. So they're probably more similar to, I don't know, whatever you might recognize. If you met them, you might recognize me. So yeah, there you go.
Tell me one of the best conversations you remember as a child with your grandfather, Lewis Jackson.
You know, we didn't have a lot of conversations. We just did a lot, you know, and that's what I really dug about him. I mean, he was social, but basically he was a doer, you know. Better to do it than say it, you know. Better to show than say, you know, that was his thing. So I'm all about that.
Ethan's Line by Mark Turner from his album Lathe of Heaven from ECM Records. The saxophonist spoke to WBGO's Josh Jackson. The Checkout is a podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, and while you're there, give us a review. The Checkout is also on our website, feature by feature, at checkoutjazz.org. And make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at checkoutjazz. I'm at Simon Rettner. Special thanks to Tim Wilkins and audio engineer Jeremy Sterone. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for listening.